I love last minute reveals and twists, and although it doesn't change the narrative, it doesn't change the gameplay, but at the end to just throw on that little thing at the end,
it's just like a cherry on top. That's just really like a cool bink.
This is New Game Plus, a retro gaming podcast where three guys spend 7 days playing one old game, and then we talk about it. My name's Dustin.
My name's Kenny.
I'm Nolan.
And this is episode 101.
Correct.
And there's a few unique things about this. The intro and outro, those are new.
Yeah. Right.
Those are by Kubi, a friend of ours.
Yeah, new friend.
A new Game Plus friend, and he offered for us to use some of his music for us. He's an incredible artist. Used some kind of 8-bit tunes and pieces and brings it into a more modern mix and creates some really good music. So check him out on SoundCloud or on his website. Links will be in the show notes. What else is new about this? We've got new dividers.
Yeah, we've got some professional dividers.
Yeah. Professional dividers. We've got some new equipment. You just got a new microphone.
I did.
And new games, new energy, and something else is new.
And for those of you who aren't watching on video right now, which is probably most of you since this is a podcast, you can't tell, but we are all sitting in the same room together.
And new people are like, so what?
That's novel, because normally we live miles and miles apart from each other, hundreds of miles apart, and never get the opportunity to do that. We always record our own audio and then mix them together beautifully later, but this time you're going to get a little bit more live, raw feel to the show because we are in Dustin's home celebrating his 30th birthday. Ooh. In here just a couple days, and so Nolan and I decided to come all the way up to Milwaukee to hang out with him for the weekend. And it was a fun surprise, and now we're all in one room recording, so.
And, we're all around one microphone, so this is fun, and I love this, and I would take this over any other thing, because even though it won't be maybe the best quality that we would typically have, I'm literally sitting in the same room as my two best friends.
Worth it.
Definitely. And we never get to do that anymore. So
no.
When we all live in the same place, which we will eventually,
absolutely,
we will have a studio, but we'll all have three microphones and we'll do that whole thing.
We'll have a studio. We'll have someone mixing audio.
Yeah. Yeah.
Camera angles.
Yeah.
Yeah. We'll have somebody mixing the camera angles.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But right now our knees are touching. Our kneecaps are all touching.
So if you just usually listen to this via audio, you're going to have to go to our YouTube and find the video to see us all three in the same room together, because I'm sure it will be worth watching.
And subscribe or else.
Or else. It's been a blast having my friends here to celebrate. We're really having a ball, which is one of the many upgrades available to Samus in the birth of a franchise and in our retro game of the week, Metroid.
Overview.
That was really well done. I'm proud of that segue.
We're having a ball.
Yeah, it's episode 101. We're stepping up our game.
I don't get it.
And
it's a ball, but he froze. It's okay. Like the freeze gun in our retro game of the week, Metroid.
How many of these are you going to do?
I can't ascend to that level.
If Nolan,
which I would be able to do if I had the high jump boots.
If Nolan doesn't get on the bandwagon here, we're going to kick him off the show and we'll have to wave goodbye.
Let me use my mother brain to explain.
Just
some
like the wave gun in our game of the week, Metroid.
All right.
Okay, my show notes live on my phone because normally I have a giant awesome desktop. Metroid is a platformer, and you've definitely heard of it if you are listening to this podcast, or if you haven't, then you should go learn about games.
If you're not familiar, or just a casual enough gamer that you haven't played a lot of things but have played Super Smash Brothers,
yeah,
the titular character from this series is Samus.
And he's on there.
And she is in that show.
He's on there.
Uh-huh.
We're don't confusing
make
him.
Of, don't He's make second fun of my guessing. First play.
He's second.
I called Samus a he during my first play because it's just a character icon. Go check out that first play. It was a lot of fun.
Sexist.
Yes. Yeah, only boys can be video game heroes.
Oh.
If you've never played this game before, though, you don't find out that the hero is a girl in actuality till the very end of the game. So
which is
maybe,
a great reveal.
Maybe spoiler alert, you know, we're ruining the experience for everybody. But I'm sorry, I interrupted. Tell
you
us more
interrupt.
About Metroid.
I can slap you now because we're in real life. Your beard would cushion it. Metroid was released in, 1986 and was released on the Famicom in Japan. Later came to the NES the next year. So that's when the US got to play. It was in 87.
30 years ago.
Right.
Because that's also my birthday.
Yeah, 86. So raise your hands if this game is older than you. Yeah,
Kenny did not raise
know,
his hand.
I'm not, you can't hear.
He's and super old.
Terrible podcast etiquette to yeah. ask for a visual. So Dustin and Nolan both raised their hands, and I'm the old man of the show.
Yeah. It was published and developed by Nintendo, and a specific team of Nintendo developed it. It's called R&D1, which was their first. Like, that's the OG Nintendo development team. They worked on, like, Mario Brothers, Donkey Kong, all the 80s hits. So, they worked on Metroid as well. And Intelligent Systems, which was surprising because they are responsible for Fire Emblem, one of my favorite series, and a couple of other games. I didn't know they were that old, especially not worked... I didn't know they worked on Metroid.
Is Fire Emblem a Nintendo
yeah,
product?
It is.
Huh.
But... Yeah, that's who worked on this game. We'll get into like composer and stuff, or I will because of the music later. But basically, it's a platformer, but it's also the first of its kind. So people use the term Metroidvania to describe adventure games.
Like everything that followed in
everything
the wake
after,
of this game, because it was
like,
so big.
It's almost like Doom clone, like that right. term how people use to describe future games. So like... It's a platformer, but it's also an action-adventure game, and we'll get into all the reasons of why it's unique, but it's almost open world.
Yeah, so Metroidvania is two different video game titles that are combined. What's that right. word when you combine two words?
Come it's on, an amalgamation
no,
of words.
No, it is, but there's an actual word for it. Metroid, obviously, is the Metro part, and then Vania is Castlevania.
Is it amalgamation yeah. that you're looking for?
And so... Don't. And so so one of the big things, like Nolan just mentioned, is that it's not just left to right, which the majority of platformers were during this time. It is an open world in which you can go left, right, up, down, and you might cycle back through some of the exact same areas. So one of the primary things for a Metroidvania title is that it's a large interconnected world map, and you're supposed to explore and survive. Those are kind of the
right.
main things.
Yeah, there's huge elements of exploration here. Tons of secrets that you have to discover.
Yeah.
Places that aren't obvious on the map that you have to find a way to get to.
And
puzzles
other,
that you have to solve.
You knew I was about to talk. And other areas that you can't get to until you've done other things.
Right.
Gotten like, other upgrades.
Like unlockable progression, yeah. where in this case you have to... get boots that let you jump higher to access an area you haven't gone to before, or find a gun to freeze enemies so that you can jump onto a frozen enemy. All kinds of really, really cool
getting
stuff
a little
like
bit
that.
Too ahead of yourself right now. We're not talking about the specifics.
I know. I want us to just
down,
revel
Kenny.
In the gameplay, but we'll get there.
Well, so the game's got the unique gameplay. It started a trend and all of that, but it also has stories. So just a quick hit on the story. The year is 20X5, and you are Samus, a bounty hunter, a space bounty hunter, and you're hired, I guess, or you work for this federation that needs to fight space pirates, which look as ridiculous as they sound if you look at the manual that came with the game, and you are working to like retrieve... Metroid?
Yeah, I think they stole something from the Federation, and it's very dangerous in the wrong hands.
They're trying to turn it into a biological weapon.
The pirates.
The pirates are, and you need to get it back so that they don't do that.
Yeah.
So you go to the planet Zebes. You can say it many different ways. I say Zabees.
That's fine. Zabees. We don't say anything.
Yeah. A planet to get that back, and that is your plot. So it's got a lot of layers to it, like plot, gameplay.
It's not super heavy story-wise.
It's not fed to you.
It pops up kind of context at the beginning of the game. You play the whole platformer. It summarizes what happens at the end. But there's enough content and, you know, puzzle exploration, platforming, RPG-ish elements as you're playing that you feel like you're in story, even though there's not a plot that's really being pushed forward outside of, you know, beat this really hard video game.
Right. It's like, hey, we've created a really good game. Now let's create a story that would make sense in this, or that would allow us to put a skin over this. And so they created a good game, and they said, okay, so let's just go ahead and make it in space, and let's make it retrieving. And anyway, so it makes sense that what you're doing, because especially... I mean, there are a few story elements in there, because you land there without much gear or equipment, and then you have to build that up, and then you have to take out some of the pirate crew before you retrieve at the end, and then you have to escape. So there are story elements, but yeah, it's not first and foremost a story game.
It was actually based off of Alien, Ridley Scott's Alien at the time. That was a big deal, and they were asked and said that movie was a lot of inspiration for developing the game in general. So,
yeah. Gameplay. So, to start off the gameplay, we kind of need to maybe go a little bit deeper into Metroidvania, like you wanted to. So for the world, it's an open world map. You've got to understand this. So you're not going to different stages or different levels, although you are going to different levels.
It's really different, like, areas.
It's different areas that are interconnected by either doors that you can access easily, just one shot opens a door, doors that you can access through 5 missiles or more,
right.
Which you don't get missiles unless you get an upgrade, and then elevators that take you up and down, or just large areas that you can drop for a long time down.
And what's great is that these aren't linear. There's a lot of games that try and do this where it makes you feel like you're progressing, but like you're automatically going to find a key on the way because that's how it works, and then there's a door at the end of the level that needs a key, and you're like, well, of course I have the key. It's here. Here, you have to go way over to one side of the map to get missiles, and then way backtrack and climb and re-explore areas you've always been to then open missile doors, so on and so forth, with a ton of other areas that accessibility changes depending on which upgrades you get and depending what order you go through things, and lots of complexity there.
And that sounds frustrating when you describe it that way, but for me, it turns out to be a really enjoyable experience.
Well, it makes it so much more rewarding when you do find things. Like, not only does it give you that good sound effect, that little musical piece, which is that in itself makes you feel like you succeeded, but that you feel the upgrades. So we can talk about this now. You start, the only thing that you can do is shoot short range and jump and run.
Right, and jump.
That's it.
Yep. You can't do anything. You can't get lower, you can't get much higher, you can't do anything else. And so you have to go throughout this huge world map, and some places are unavailable to you before you get some upgrades, but you're getting these upgrades. And so the first one, which is, I love that they did this, because Kenny in his first play misses it because...
No.
I went into normal
platforming mode, and you drop down, and I went right, because that's how you normally do platformers, and I played through a bunch. I got farther than I thought I would in my first play, but I never found the initial upgrade that I would have needed to even progress. I got to that wall that is short and that you have to roll through, and I went, oh, I'm going to have to go back and left.
It's definitely intentional, because then it's like the way you play this game is like, you don't just go right, you go everywhere.
Which is, teaches you that from the very, very first thing.
It's a great way to teach it, because you can teach it through a manual, you can teach it through a dialogue box that you hit or something.
Right.
Instead, it just teaches you by putting the first upgrade inches to the left,
right,
like just right out of frame.
Literally.
It's not even far. You don't have to do anything. You have to just move to the left and the first upgrade's there, which is just brilliant. And so that first upgrade is the Maru Mari. It's something like that.
But there's a name for
it? Yeah, there is a name.
It's a morph ball. It lets you go into a ball and roll. That's like Samus's signature.
Which is great because I don't think this had been done at a platform before where you can morph into a ball. I know that's fairly super simple, right? But I mean, it wasn't for back then.
And like the animation that came with it and it's everything. Great.
That it's a ball. So when you fall from a platform higher to a platform lower, you have a little bounce.
I mean, it's so great.
You didn't have to do that. They could have made it a heavy ball, you know, but they wanted to do that. And then you go throughout and find some other upgrades. So what are a few of the other upgrades that you find and what does it do?
Well, you get weapon upgrades from one.
Such as
your bullets change distance first, which is huge. As you first start this game, you are shooting like feet in front of your face. And it's super frustrating that you got to run right up on an enemy or let them get so close to you to survive at all. And so first your bullets get to where they go all the way across the screen, which is massive. Then you can get either different bullets that attack in different patterns, attack for different amounts of damage, freeze your enemies, like I mentioned earlier, that has tons of utility because then you can freeze an enemy and jump on them and progress that way. What else? You get boots that let you jump super high. I know I'm forgetting some even.
Screw attack, which is like this attack that happens when you jump. So there's two different jumps, like, which is really cool. You can jump and then move left and right where it's just a normal like jump. But if you jump while hitting left or right, it's an attack. It's called a screw attack where Samus spins in midair,
makes a noise and flashes.
You have different suits. And we didn't even talk about the bombs.
Yeah, but we're going too fast and not even talking about
these. There's so many of these.
We just got to screw attack. And it does damage. It can... And we got this, and we got this, and we got this.
Well, to speak to everything we've said so far, there are multiple ways to damage enemies. You don't just shoot. Like, you can... The screw attack will hurt. You can bomb them while you're in Morph Ball. You can shoot them with the variety of different missiles. So, like, there's also creativity that comes along with how you get through the stage.
And without getting overwhelmed and over inundated by how much there is, because that's a lot if we were just to say it, you slowly get these you slowly get them and have plenty of time to acclimate to the new ability or the new controlling or mechanics before you find the next upgrade.
And they continue with each upgrade that you get to give you really good ways to learn that upgrade before you progress. In the same way that the starting stage teaches you, this game is great about the game design itself teaching you and forcing you to use the mechanics you've just learned. There are advanced mechanics like putting a bomb when you're rolling below you so that it will move you up that you can't progress unless you find or use or stumble upon. There's tons of stuff that is like, you better learn this game well if you're going to progress. But it does it while still teaching you naturally and holding your hand. It's really, really well thought out.
Upgrades are an important mechanic to Metroid, but you use them to find secret rooms.
Oh, great.
What about secret rooms?
There are unfair aspects of the level design.
There are.
Which a lava pit, which the whole game you're like, do not fall in that lava, you will take damage. Oh, wait, it's just fake, and there's a hidden floor beneath it.
Not
or
all
lack
of them.
Thereof.
There are two or three lava floors that are fake. They don't do damage to you, and so when you fall into it, it actually lets you go into a lower portion of that stage.
Which is so messed up, but they even have enemies come out of the lava that wouldn't normally come out at that point to give you a little hint something may be different here. Something that's easy to miss, and I think one of the things that sort of stopped one of the deeper plays that we'd gone through until we figured that piece out, but so many moments like that. But I think the game developers knew it. They even named one of the areas in this game No Fair,
which is just brilliant. They knew what they were doing, and
absolutely,
they knew how to increase the difficulty. So at the very beginning, it felt difficult because you don't have much life. You fall in a lava pit or get hit a couple times, you're dead. But then you really feel stronger and stronger and stronger the more upgrades you get. So at the point where enemies are not going to kill you, enemies alone are not going to kill you. So they had to figure out a way, how can we continue to make this game more difficult, although you're very powerful? And they did that through level design, through hiding things, through making the ceilings a lot lower so you can't really use screw attack well. And that's frustrating, but it's brilliant game design.
It's absolutely great game design. And it shows that they were playing this game and knowing what they needed to do even the times that you get your energy upgrades, which upgrades your health bar and refill your life, are strategically placed where if you've gotten one prior, you know, you're going to have to get to the next one to really progress, which I think speaks to progression in this game, because we play a lot of games like this that are hard to explore, have secrets, and very difficult. We've talked about this game a lot as just like you get these upgrades and you get stronger. We haven't really talked to the difficulty of this game. This is not an easy platformer. It's hard. You got to learn it. And yet the game employs a password system and employs the fact that you don't have a limited number of lives. You just get set back to a starting place and, you know, have your health way lower. But with any upgrades you found, which makes progressing through this game doable. And we play a lot of games that are like, it is so hard that we would never tell somebody to play this game without playing it, you know, in a way that they can have save states or whatever, as a modern kind of game. But they overcame that by having a password system, by having enough difficulty that dying is a huge setback, but that you can still progress and get your life back up and work through the game. And they were just brilliant about it.
I think that in the Famicom version, there's 3 save files like Zelda, which would have been amazing to have.
On the earlier version, there's save files, and then it goes to a wonky password system?
Yes, which
that's interesting.
Mega Man had.
Feels backwards.
It does, and that would have been nice to have, but the password system, I think, literally allows you to continue like right where you left off. Like position and everything,
but you don't get a password until you die.
Sure, that's true.
So, it is it. I think you had made a mention just a moment ago. You said a lot. It is still fair, and it provides some different ways to make it fair so that it's not you die and you're screwed. Because I think you've got infinite lives. Even like right. We never die to the point of you can't progress anymore. However, it does get. It does get increasingly difficult, if not near impossible, without save states for the modern gamer, at least near the end. So the way that the game is set up is there are 2 mini bosses, which is just brilliant that you can have multiple bosses in a game that's not different levels. Mm-hmm. Like, right. So they were really creative on how you did that. You can't get to the 2 mini bosses until you get a certain amount of upgrades or the certain upgrades because you just can't platform to those locations. And then you can't get to the final area, the final boss level, until you beat those 2 mini bosses, because when you do, you go to a certain room, a bridge opens up, and you can finally roll across the lava pit. Once you do, you get to the final stage.
Then it's you versus Mother Brain.
And no, it's you versus a million projectiles on the screen at one time, which is so hard. Guys, we played it together downstairs. I was controlling Samus and they were watching me, and it was like really, really hard. Like every time I would make a little progress, we would do a save state because, I mean, we needed to beat it. So like, I think if you had the game and you played it for weeks and months, you would eventually beat it. I do think so.
Oh, absolutely.
But it takes that. It takes that grind and luck and skill, and it's
a perfect balance for me there of making a game that is hard enough that you can beat it and want to beat it, but that's not easy. You feel like you have a sense of accomplishment. When you beat this game, you're like, I did it.
Yeah.
Yeah, so the upgrade thing. You don't have to have all the upgrades to beat the game.
No.
But to have a chance for most gamers, you're going to need almost every single one of them. You could go without some of the missile packs. There's a large quantity of those. You could go out with... You had plenty of missiles still left. You had almost 250.
250 after Mother Brain?
No, you had 250 when you got to the room with Mother Brain.
Yeah, but you have to waste so many. I don't know how many I had after I beat her.
Including progressing through that room to get to her. You have doors that are more difficult to damage than anything you've seen prior to this game. And respawn, so you're on a timer of dodging things. And
so I take that as you get there and you can't go past because you run out of missiles. You have to go back in the game and find upgrades. And I think that was intentional, and I think that's good because it's like explore the game more. Right. And
if you under-upgrade yourself,
yeah,
even if you get the essential things to pass it, it would be very, very hard to beat. Which makes this game super intriguing for me to see a speedrun of. Because those guys figure out the bare minimum you need to beat a game in the most efficient route. And while this game is normally super robust, knowing what that is would be so, so interesting to see. I'm going to go back and watch some speedruns of this game this week for sure.
The same goes for health upgrades, because I was saying you just get hit by stuff. I don't know of a way to get through that room not getting hit very much. Like, they made that room so that you would have to have a bunch of disposable health.
Yes. Right. And that you just, you soak up that damage. That's just a part of it. After finally beating Mother Brain, it sets the pirate base and planet to explode. And so you've got a set amount of time to escape the base, which is just a great ending sequence. Because any time in a movie or something like that, for that final sequence for you to be running from the flames, running from the explosions, and it gives you that epic feeling here. You finally conquered the boss, and now you have to make it out of the base before it explodes. And once you do, the planet explodes, you've accomplished your task, and you're able to go back home.
And it's at that point that they wait to drop the big reveal that, again, everybody knows at this point because the characters move forward and is so well known and is in other things. But it's at that point that your heroic hero is standing there in their armor, and the armor flashes, and it, you know, and they take the armor off, and it's a redheaded woman, just this like pasty white, meek looking woman that you've been doing all this time, and you know that was a cool thing for them to do, to just be like,
awesome,
Samus is a girl, guys.
They even referred to Samus in the booklet as he. I don't know if to throw you off or it, like, late they were like, let's make her a girl at the end. Either way, I love that they did that, even if it was just for fun. They were just like, let's just do it, whatever. I love that.
Aged.
So let's talk about how well this game has aged.
So, I am really familiar with Super Metroid, which is the Super Nintendo title in the series.
And you talked about it a lot this week.
I did talk about it fanboyed. So much, because I had played the original Metroid before, but not this much. Like, never all the way through. And as I was playing, it was just screaming Super Metroid. And I was like, but wait, this game came out so long before that. I was blown away that they hit everything so well the first time.
Not just so long before other games in the sequence. This is an early game in general. We're talking 1986.
Before Mega Man, right?
Now, yes, like just a year or two before Mega Man. But I feel like this was right at the turn of the tide from Super Famicom, or from Famicom, whatever, over into Nintendo. Because right around the same year, because I looked earlier, I was like, there's got to be games that are not, this has got to be a complete standout. But I think this is the beginning of The Legend of Zelda, so it's the first one there. It's Kid Icarus. There's a few other like pretty solid titles in there that came out right about this time, but this still is a standout, I would say, even among those. Multiple times this week, I was like, wow, that's good, or this is a good game mechanic, or that's a really good track, or that's a really good graphic that we're looking at right now. But then when you realize that it was produced in 1986, that changes the game entirely. Like, that, it's good music for video gaming. But then it was in 1986. It was good graphics for video gaming. But then it was in 1986. They did stuff with this system and console during a time where this had not been done and was not being done. And it blew my mind so many times this week.
Outside of one or two things that are design decisions that show that it was a very early video game.
Sure.
It feels like someone going back today and making a quote-unquote retro platformer because it's that good.
Yeah, that's fair.
I really think.
But what are some, so you mentioned, what are a few of the design decisions or thing or limitations to the console, because that's some of it, but that would be felt and aged today.
Some of it's save states versus passwords, but there's plenty of others.
That's a big one.
I think the definite big one for me was that some of the like rooms are just like cut and paste copies.
Completely.
Even enemy positions and how they move and how it looks, but they're different rooms. Like, you have to go through them to get somewhere new, but they look the same, and it's very confusing to be like, have I been here or not?
And now we tried to process, was that purposeful? Because playing now that Mother Brain stage, that could be very purposeful.
It could have been.
Knowing how evil they are.
Yes. I also think sometimes game designers were very creative with their limitations. And in a game this early where the hardware is fairly limiting, where there's different tracks and music that's taken up space, where you've got upgrades and this robust map that it's having to keep track of, you're going to have to recycle some of your assets, and that's going to include enemy types and even room look. I would assume that part of that was a limitation that they were creatively getting the bigger world by using a couple of rooms that were repetitive. I don't know that that's the case, but that would be my assumption, because everything else is creative enough that except for places that they did that to be tricky, and they did a few places, I think it was probably just them really stretching how much they could cram into this cartridge. And that's so great to see creative solutions like that.
As you do with some of these early consoles, I mean, you have this in these video games. When there are multiple things happening on a screen at any given time, there's significant lag. And so that happens often because your bullets enough can do that. And then not to mention the amount of enemies, especially late game when they're just throwing so many enemies at you. And in the Mother Brain, the fight at the end, the lagging is ridiculous, which puts you at a disadvantage because you can't control as well as you would be able to if there was no lag.
Right. Especially when you have that wave gun that's got that, you know, that sine wave animation that's moving things around. Like, it's almost worth avoiding the strongest gun just because you tighten up your animations and you're less likely to, you know, to freeze everything up.
So there are aging limitations and there are aging things that we see today, but there are some things that are transcendent and some things that just were incredible in were miraculous in 1986 and are still incredible today.
One of those being the music for me. Big surprise, but Tanaka is the man who is responsible for composing this game, and it's very unique because it's not like you look up the OST, which you can and it's great, but it's not like a set of just beautiful tracks. In fact, someone was quoted saying that he actually pulled off silence and made it beautiful.
Yeah.
Like, I'll read it to you. Tanaka's greatest contribution to game music comes paradoxically in the form of silence. He was arguably the first video game composer to empathize the absence of sound in his music. Tanaka's score is an embodiment of isolation and atmospheric effect, which is like it strengthens the tone of the story, of the little story that you're given at the beginning. It's added to you as you play through music and sound design too.
Right. And each world is consistent with itself. As you're going to a new area, you're getting a new track. The transition between let you know that something important is happening.
While still being pretty seamless.
Right. Everything that music can do to help bolster without drawing attention to itself and just being a distraction, this game does well. The sound effects and those kind of things too, for the most part. There's one or two that can be a little frustrating, like any, you know, old game where the sound is just... You know, I even complained in my first play about if you get low on health, that beeping, it just stays incessant and it's loud and it's very beepy as a beep. But like overall, the sound in this game just blows me away.
It's very beepy as a beep.
Yeah. It's a beep, beep, beep.
During this time, if I recall correctly, and I think it's right about this time, when sound effects would come into play, the music would have to stop for that because it would have to do that. This was one of those early games where they did both. The music design on this game is impeccable. They did so much with so little, and the tracks are perfect for there. The very description of Samus is that she is a lone bounty hunter. And with the music that they can paint and really show that she is alone... is a masterpiece.
Yeah, like it's just quiet at times with a few little beeps here and there, and like it really makes you feel like you're in space. And Dustin, you mentioned earlier today that you were jumping and you weren't able to attack a certain enemy because they're not meant to die, and it made a different kind of beep, and that let you know that you can't do
it. Or like a ding. Like it gave you the feeling of a metal or something, and so you know by the sound alone that you're not doing damage there. It's just brilliant. But it's not just music. It's also the graphics. And we've mentioned this. It's not, okay, right? You're not 3D. You're not in this real world environment. But what they did in painting, a lot of these early games, and modern games today are, but in a different way. Some of these early games are kind of like art, right? Like it's like you're looking at more of a painting or a drawing or a sketch. And in this, they do that. So they've got your different colors, but then they've got the different the textures on the world that make the areas look different from other areas. And then Samus herself, that sprite, you don't have sprites this good during that time.
No, the sprite's amazing. There's a few animations that are weaker than others, but the ball one is excellent. I made fun of how it looks when she runs in my first play. It's a little goofy, but you don't use it much. You're jumping, you're running, you're shooting, and she looks excellent for the time. I think one of the neatest things about how this game has aged is just its accessibility. A lot of these older games, you feel like you've got four directions and the two buttons, and so they can feel a little repetitive. And so even the gameplay things we were talking about of slowly building your character means that in this world where things are simple and pretty and look nice, but not exceptionally pretty. I mean, wonderfully done and looks great, but this game didn't try to be a Prince of Persia. It didn't paint your backdrops that are really pretty. It just used the simple assets that it had very creatively. And so that art was great, but behind you, you pretty much just have black backgrounds and then the stuff you're jumping on. But even that they did beautifully, and yet they let it feel like you're progressing and that the complexity is there, where even with your couple of buttons that you have enough options for it to feel good, it just doesn't feel like a 1986 title.
Yeah. I mean, the legacy also is clearly what we can speak to when we're on this section. Like
a number of sequels.
Yeah, I mean, unfortunately, the series did get kind of like dropped off almost. Like Nintendo just kind of set it aside for other titles. I don't know why.
For a good amount of time. So after Metroid, though, they did Metroid 2, and that was soon after, and then they did Super Metroid. But then there's a long break before any next Metroid game. Silence. And then weren't they not that good, like Metroid Fusion and Prime?
Okay, so Prime, amazing. Fusion, amazing. Fusion is a GBA title. It's actually one of my favorite in the series. They actually remade Metroid 1 on GBA. It's called Zero Mission. Also amazing.
That's cool.
So like the ones Sweet. They did a little here and there were great. The Prime series is great. Some don't like it. It's a first person view of Samus, and that could have been awful, but it's pulled off great. Like I think it's amazing. I think a lot of people do. Wow.
When you're a ball, you're just seeing things go really quickly.
They do a great job of like zooming so out to third person when you need it.
Just over and over again.
It sounds bad, but
you
like
have any kind of motion sickness, as soon as you get that power up, you turn the game off.
But they did, they used different camera angles, and they got it done. And then the world is beautiful. And now, then there were some that were like, what are y'all doing? It was like Mii characters, like from the 3DS and the Wii. And they threw Metroid on the title.
Stop.
Yeah. It's like, what?
There's always that, like, was this a popular or good game that we can bring up of, did your main character get into Smash Brothers? And we talked about earlier how Samus is a really well-known character there. I knew her from that game before going back and playing Metroid. And huge title huge character in that series. And that always, just to me, that game is such a, like, who do people know? Let's bring them all together. That it speaks a lot to how big and popular this game was.
Right, and it's not just because it's one game, though. It's because it's a legacy.
Absolutely.
And especially with, I think, the most recent. You've got 2017, the most recent release was Samus Returns for the 3DS.
Just came out.
Okay, just came out. And then we've already got, I think, a little bit of information about an upcoming title for the Switch, Metroid Prime 4.
Yeah, it's they confirmed the title at E3, so they're making Prime 4 on the Switch, which should be amazing. And apparently, from what it looks like, Samus Returns on the 3DS looks great.
Final thoughts.
So at the end of each and every one of our episodes, we determine whether or not this game gets our vote for New Game Plus status, which is just our simple thumbs up.
or thumbs down
concerning playing this game in the modern era. And so it takes the majority vote, 2 out of 3, to swing one way or another. You've listened to this episode thus far, and so you might have a good feeling of what you think we're going. Any one of you want to go
all
first?
Together now.
But you're going to be wrong.
2, 1. Yes.
Yes. New game plus. Right. I mean, I just wrote down that I've told you guys, but for those of you on the podcast, I had never played a Metroid game before.
Right.
Neither had I.
Really, not at all. I'm not a big platformer. I'm not good at platform. We're not good at video games.
No, we're not.
But Nolan is.
Nolan's good at video
Kenny
games.
Kenny and I are not.
But we enjoy them, but we're bad at them.
Especially when it comes to platformers.
Yeah.
And then I like story. That's one of my favorite things. Story and characters, which you don't get much at all in this game. And then on top of that, I don't have a lot of patience with trying to... Like, I like to use guides and walkthroughs.
Right.
And so I don't have patience trying to find things. I played a lot this week. Kenny played a lot this week. And then when they got here, Kenny and I watched Nolan play the rest of the game, because Nolan is really, really good at these games.
Yeah.
And he's able to keep in his head what room is where and what collectibles he's gotten. It's really amazing to watch.
I think that some of that comes from having experience with the series, because Super Metroid also takes place in some of the areas that you go to in this game. So
really,
yeah,
well, it's a muscle, I guess, a gaming muscle that I had never worked out fully. However, playing so I had always had a bad taste in my mouth towards those games. However, playing Metroid this week changed that perception some. I understand Metroid is far superior to most of these other platformers, so it's not like I'm going to now delve into the world of platforming video games. But if I'm going to delve into any, it's going to be the Metroid series, because this Metroid game started off right. And may I add one more time, 1980 freaking six.
Crazy. Yeah, crazy good for the time. And yeah, I mean, we've already kind of all said, you know, this game was great. And it was obvious that we were going to land there, because we've been just lauding this game for the most part. But I'm as blown away as you are. It was creative and self-aware. And the creators were willing to do challenging, difficult things, but that made you think. And I love that. I love when a game doesn't hold your hand, where it walks beside you and gives you what you need to figure things out, but is willing to let you have that moment where you find something new, or where you get to somewhere you haven't been before and you have that sense of accomplishment. And this is one of those games that as you're playing, you go like, I figured it out. Oh, I beat that hard part. Oh, I got to the next upgrade and now here we go again. Oh, I get to this new area. Oh, I finally beat this game and that mother brain was a mother. You know, like it's a hard game, but satisfying, and you pick it up and it's easy to jump into. And so absolutely, totally, 100% New Game Plus for me.
I think they could have stopped at this game, made no other games in the series, and it would have the same legacy that it has.
Dang.
Super Metroid's amazing. My favorite in the series, best of all time. However, I was blown away by how well they hit it the first time and then just expanded on that with graphics and more memory to use. So if you're going to play this game but you're frustrated with platformers and you're finding it really difficult, look up just a map of the game that lays out the map, period. You don't need to look at like how to do it. Just look at that map. It will help you play the game and you will still get a feeling of accomplishment and reward by playing it. So absolutely, New Game Plus.
So the 1986 Famicom NES classic Metroid is New Game Plus certified. We heard from a couple of our viewers this week. Antonin wrote in. He said, leave it to me to join in when you guys play a platformer, the bane of my existence. Mine too.
Wow.
I played the game, sure, but never got through the first level. I watched a part of the run, and the person doing it got some rocket by killing those moving hedgehog things. And you know what? I killed a bunch of them, and I never got a single rocket. He hadn't gotten the rocket upgrades yet.
Nope.
I love it.
There was a very important part you skipped.
He said, the game is good. It's somewhat of a departure from the other platformers we all played. Don't get me wrong, Mario is great, so is Mega Man, but this game felt like much more fun, albeit being much more difficult for the beginner. Mega Man and Mario were fun to jump into, and without much knowledge, you could get pretty far. With this game, I felt like I had to look up a few things to figure them out. I wish I had more patience for these games and probably a different controller. The Xbox controller does not lend itself well to NES platformers. So for anyone wanting to play this game, do yourself a favor buy an NES controller or equivalent, or just play it on 3DS, or just pick up the NES Classic, or better yet, get a RetroPie. I can't wait for the next game.
I think he does speak to something important, though, in that though this game is great from the beginning and we talked about it, I think it gets more fun the further you go. The more upgrades you get, early on, you're more apt to die just because you have low health, and it's a frustrating game early. A good one and still fun, but the farther you get, the more rewarding this game gets, and it's still difficult, but it keeps that difficulty in different ways. Yeah. And so I would say if you play a little bit of it and you're not sure, dive in deep, because this game, it will reward you for any time invested.
Yeah. Zion wrote in, and he said, my father is getting out of hip replacement surgery, so I did not have a lot of time to play, but this game was one of my first loves. I would spend hours and hours playing. I went back, and it was just like riding a bike. I did not get far, but will return as soon as I am able. I love how I was able to get this game on my Wii U. Love the game, and I hope it gets NGP status. The graphics were awesome for the time, and I loved the story. It even got better when I found out the main character was a woman. I don't know if this was the case back then, but I replayed the game and it gave a different feel because of that. P.S. When is the next Patreon pool? There are some Jurassic Park games I would like to recommend that are better than the last one.
No.
It doesn't matter. We're not going to play Jurassic Park games.
We're not doing another NGP pool.
We will do a Patreon poll. It's right around the corner. Sorry to hear about your dad. Hope that he's doing well, and glad that you enjoy this game and have such a love for it. And yeah, I imagine that back then, like, I knew now that Samus is a woman, but how much cooler, just an additional reward just at the end, I feel like, because at the time the meta was Mel.
Yeah, that fun reveal when you were playing this pre-internet where that wasn't known and you beat the whole game and you're like, yeah, my guy's a boss. And then you go like, oh no, my lady is a boss.
I love, like, last minute reveals and twists, and although it doesn't change the narrative, it doesn't change the gameplay, but at the end, to just throw on that little thing at the end,
it's just like a cherry on top. That's just really like a cool bink.
That's gonna be a sound clip.
I knew it. But now we're going to put Metroid to rest. We did beat it, so we can move on from Metroid this week, and we're going to move on to the next retro video game, which it's time for the first time after episode 100. We're moving into this kind of new season of New Game Plus. We are going to still randomly select the next retro video game that we're going to be playing for the next 7 days. And it is... It is a game that came out in 2001 for the PC. It's a third-person shooter, and Rockstar Studios was a part of it. They were the publishers, Rockstar Games.
GTA.
Which is very, very interesting. It's come out on many platforms since, but PC is where it began.
Yeah, I thought this was a PlayStation title.
There is a PlayStation.
You don't know what the game is yet.
Well, I know, we just...
You're ready for the reveal, Kenny?
Okay, show me.
The game.
I felt like it was also a PlayStation title.
The game is Max Payne.
Sweet. Never played.
The very first one in the series. It's a very noir, kind of dark, gritty video game that my wife and I played the series through as 3 was coming out many years ago now. In my opinion, a brilliant game, and one that has some of the best character and story. That's why I like it a lot.
Never played this game, but remember the hype when it came out and did watch a little of it being played when it first came out and loved it. I thought it was a little overhyped as a series, but I've never gone deep. So we'll find out if my preconceptions are wrong.
Hey, this is a game that they made a movie about after, right?
We're not going to
talk about that in the age.
No.
I don't know if we've done that yet.
We've had movies that have become games, but never a game that we've played on this show that's become a movie because of it.
I don't think.
Fair enough. Yeah.
We have a Discord. We would love to chat with you about video games in that Discord. Join us there by clicking the invite link that you can find on our Twitter.
We love hearing from our community, and Nolan, that was a great invitation to Discord.
We can talk about Max Payne or any other games or just anything. I mean, Discord is a very lightweight program that you can download, and we can talk to you on the daily, or you can email us your commentary and be read as a part of the show to ngppodcast@gmail.com. We'd love to include your thoughts as a part of next week's episode.
Absolutely. We got to take a minute and say thank you to all of our supporters, to everyone who lends us your time, your ears, your energy, your attention, some of your gaming time to be the games that we're playing that week, all of the things, but especially those of you who go above and beyond and support us on Patreon, our patrons, and especially our producer-level supporters. Zion, Bradley, Gimbarino, you guys are absolutely the best, and you help us to do the things that we do to keep moving NGP forward and connecting and recommending which old games you should play and which ones you shouldn't.
Yeah, and it's you patrons that are making it possible for us to continue to improve and continue to grow this podcast, and we aim to do that over the next 100 episodes as we have hopefully done the last 100. You can always catch us on social media, Facebook and Twitter at NGP Podcast. Listen to us directly on iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, or Google Music, or any other podcast provider of your choice. Make sure you subscribe so that you are the first to get new NGP episodes, and visit our YouTube channel so that you can see this episode in its glory with the three of us sitting in one room together around one microphone. Join us next week as we play Max Payne. Until then, I'm still Dustin.
I'm Kenny.
And I'm Nolan.
And this has been episode 101 of New Game Plus.